Hello and welcome to Inside Sports Dead in Goal NRL podcast. We've finally reached the finals. It's been a long season, but we've all hung in there. And so here we go for our first finals preview. I'm James Smith. I'm joined by Jeff Centenera. How are you going, mate?
Very well, James. Never thought we'd make it.
No, definitely
like Jonathan
not.
Thurston, never thought we'd make it.
And also down the line is Anthony Brand. How are you, Anthony?
Hey guys, good to talk with you. What a exciting weekend ahead.
Oh, unbelievable. There's a bit of a, the racing purists like to call Derby Day the biggest day of the race year, not the Melbourne Cup, because that's the day before the Melbourne Cup, or the Saturday before the Cup, where there's 12 Group 1 races. I reckon this is our Derby Day type weekend. We got four games, and it's a top eight sides all playing each other. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's just it. I've always thought that, you know, one of the things about kind of footy finals is as good as they are, you are always effectively every week eliminating large chunks of the competition and large numbers of fans from effectively caring because their team is out of it. So this first week of the finals is always great because, yeah, you've still got effectively half the league involved.
Yeah, and how's it going up there, Anthony, as far as the Bronx go? Like, any trepidation, the fact that they have to come down here this weekend?
Yeah, I think that was a big result for them. It's huge for the Broncos. I mean, playing at Suncorp Stadium is such an advantage, isn't it? I mean, there's such a colorful crowd. They don't get a lot of football up there as much as you guys do in Sydney, so they always turn out. I think they average about over 30,000 a game as it is. That would have been up to 40,000 screaming Queenslanders. So for the Roosters to be hosting them down there at Allianz is a major advantage.
Yeah, is it true? So if they win this weekend, I think they're playing their next game back up at Suncorp, aren't they? Is that how it goes?
Yeah,
I believe that's the case, yeah.
I think so, yeah. So I think if they lost and Manly won, or whoever wins that at Manly and Penrith, is that right? Plays the Broncos up there?
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Well, there you go. Well, what an incentive. Okay. Wow. Yeah. No, it's going to be terrific. Just a quick rundown of where we're going to go today. We're going to talk about Michael Maguire, whether it was fair or not, or smart that he's been turfed. We're going to have a look at the bottom eight teams before we get into our matchups, just to discuss where they might have gone wrong and where we went right or wrong in our predictions of them earlier on in the year, and we'll have a look at our hero and zero for the week, and touch in on the Rugby League World Cup countdown. We're going to have a look at PNG, that Rugby League Mad Nation, and then we're going to have a look at our Twitter question and the sort of responses that garnered. And right at the end, we'll have a look at how you're going, Anthony, with the big stories that are on the Inside Sport website and what we can expect. All righty, so getting into it. Yeah, sorry, mate. Getting into it. Michael Maguire, I'll just ask the question. If you were Souths, would you have gotten rid of him this week? What do you reckon, Jeff?
This one kind of intrigues me. I can remember for a story I was doing on Greg Inglis a couple of years back, I kind of read Madge's book because I was preparing to interview him, which never kind of really came off. But got a feel for kind of how he prepares and kind of maybe the way he sees kind of the way he goes about his job as a coach. I thought this was a possibility. I thought maybe he had kind of one more season in him. If they missed finals another season, I think the club's hand would have been forced. But it still does come as a bit of a surprise to me. When I look at it from the outside, I don't have any kind of particular insight into it, and just apart from what I read, I mean, it really does look like a case of. And, this thing has been on my mind ever since, sorry to drag the AFL into a good league podcast, but kind of interviewing kind of Paul Ruse just a couple of weeks ago and kind of talking about kind of the life cycle of the modern football coach. And he was talking about how realistically you only have about there's a real seven-year itch to coaching these days. You only have that amount of time before, you know, no matter how well you've gone, you know, it the players just stop listening. Like, you know, it just, you need kind of, you know, Ruse's solution was that you move on and you leave a succession plan so you don't have this situation where you have to force out a coach and have to go through all that disruption. But, yeah. You know, you kind of, you do that to kind of just, yeah, because the players just, they just grow tired of, you know, of the one voice kind of after that period of time. And when you look at a guy like Maguire, a really intense individual, it's kind of easy to see how, yeah, how that situation kind of at South's kind of reached ahead. But nonetheless, I'm surprised they kind of pulled the trigger in this way. And I think the thing that's kind of really kind of, you know, illustrates something, kind of what's going on to me, is that the number of job offers he's got lined up now immediately after losing this job at the Rabbitohs, like, it speaks to kind of, yeah, the quality of coach he is.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter a lot of the time, does it? Like, how good the coach is. There is a bit of a sour milk sort of. There's a due date, isn't there, on coaches, and you have to be a really good one for a club to make you want to hang around. Hey, Anthony, like, unlike Wayne Bennett, is the exception to the rule, of course.
I was going to say Wayne's the exception to the rule. I think that as a whole, though, South handled this really well. There was a little bit of conjecture around whether he was going to be moved on for the last couple of weeks, but I guess Des Hasler, Canterbury coach, has really stolen most of those headlines. So I guess Madra's a little bit under the radar, even though they finished 12th, second year running, which is disappointing, very disappointing for them. But yeah, it's really interesting. But as far as his axing goes, I think they handled it quick. Anthony Seibold had been briefed. He knew about it. And he's taken up the reins there. And from what I've read and put a story up today, He got Madge's blessing, and Madge said to him, you know, best of luck, mate. But, yeah, getting back to what you said, 7 years, I think you're right. I mean, look at Des Hasler with Manly there. He took them from about 14th to two premierships within about a seven-year period. And that seemed to really work well for him. So maybe you're right. I mean, it's not like players. Or I guess it is similar to players, that they shift around a bit. And maybe it's good for everyone. Like, a player gets a new lease of life at a new club, and maybe that's how it's looking for the modern day coach as well.
Yeah. You invoked the name of Wayne Bennett there, and this is a question that I'd put out to, you know, to the pod here. You know, can there be another Wayne Bennett? Like, I don't think, you know, I don't think you get tenure the way he has anymore. And I think it's interesting kind of to see, you know, him return to the Broncos, but, you know, like, he probably can't have that period he had again in the 90s. And then the question becomes, if you are to have kind of a long-term association with the club that into the future, I think that's the only way you can possibly do it, to basically not have one unbroken stint, but to, you know, kind of maybe kind of return after a period. And of course, the ones putting the light of this is another name we haven't brought up is Craig Bellamy. But the question is, yeah, no, are there going to be any more Wayne Bennetts in rugby league going into the future?
They're probably not. That's such a good point you bring up. Maybe there isn't even the Wayne Bennett that we've built in our collective minds doesn't even exist either. It's a great point about having to, that need for even freshening up of the bloke himself, having to have those stints at Newcastle and the Dragons. That's an ideal way of him keeping involved and fresh in the game. The only point I wanted to bring up about sacking coaches is there's a big challenge of, if you're going to get rid of one, you want to make sure that you've got an equally good one or a better option coming in. And it's something that we haven't really seen yet with New South Wales, because they've gotten rid of Laurie Daly, and we aren't aware of who's going to take over him. So,
and getting back to your point, Jeff, I think the big thing is success. Wayne Bennett, I don't think he might have missed one final series in his first 18, 19 years at Brisbane, and he won six premierships in that time. I guess when you've got success, you don't really need to look over your shoulder. had the Broncos not had that success, maybe he would have been shifted. But I guess being in the one-team town, he had, you know, at most of the time he had 10-plus internationals in his side. You know, he was always going to be successful, really. But full credit to him. I mean, 6 premierships in his first 18 years was ridiculous. But I think success, if you're winning, you know, people want to keep you around.
That's just right. I mean, Anthony, the thing I find odd, and I think I guess we'll talk about this when we kind of go into our review of the bottom 8 sides. But you know, to look at Souths, if it really is just a response to consecutive years of finishing 12th after, you know, after thinking that they were potentially the next dominant side in rugby league when they kind of won that drought breaking premiership kind of, what do we say, 3 years ago now, you know, if they really wanted to create kind of a break and from kind of the Maguire era, so to speak, what I find odd is that they've gone out and they've, you know, and this is not a comment on Anthony Seibold, who comes with sterling reputation. They say that, you know, they're hiring a guy who's a bit of a Maguire clone. So they've basically gone out and hired kind of the same type of guy. So I'm not quite sure whether that's, you know, that's kind of the direction that you want to take, which seems to kind of lead me to think that, you know, that maybe there was, yeah, there were more reasons beyond merely kind of what it's on the surface of this decision. Maybe, you know, that, you know, kind of, you know, Maguire himself decided that, you know, he seems to have been fairly all right, even though, you know, the decision came down quickly. That, you know, that whether there's something there. I mean, that, I guess, remains to come out. But I think he'll land on his feet, surely, just on the basis of the number of offers he's getting.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, absolutely. Yeah, so, all right, now we're going to have a look at the, how the bottom 8 fared. Do you want to go from the bottom? Do you want to go from 8th or 16th first, guys? What do you want to do?
Yeah, let's go from the bottom because I think, yeah, that's a bit probably easier to kind of resolve.
All right, yeah, so yeah. Beauty. So Newcastle finishing in 16th, nobody really expected anything too much from them, only improvement, and which they did. Like throughout the whole year.
Yeah, the question I put out is, were you surprised at how much better they got?
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely not. I keep boring people with this, but at the start of the year, they were showing their trial matches over the internet.
You did say that.
I've said this several times, but I saw Newcastle flog Canberra 40-0 down at Seaford Oval, and I didn't mean that. I thought that Newcastle were going to make the semis or anything, but I just thought this team's better than what a lot of people give them credit for.
So, quick follow up question:
yeah,
is the improvement curve as such that they get off 16th next year?
Yeah, definitely. There's a strong base there. There's an actual base there now. So,
I think so. I mean, if they did, I think Nathan Brown would be safer anyway. But with their signings, I think they're gonna go a lot better. Would they get 6 or 7 wins? That's pretty decent for them compared to last year. I mean, they went a long time without a win. So I mean, yeah, I think that they're poised to do really well. Kalyn Ponga's there.
Yeah, Ponga arrives next year, or is it season after? It's next year, isn't it?
Next year. Yeah.
Then you've got Sean Kennedy-Dowell who's there this year. There's now conjecture because Maguire has left South, but maybe Dane Gagai may have had a clause in his contract there.
Ooh, interesting.
To possibly get out of that. You'd think, though, if that was the case, that Magic probably stick around. With the opportunity to have Gagai there, you'd think you'd probably see that one through because he was very heavily involved with Gagai's signing. So that's an interesting one as well.
Yeah, all righty. So Michael Maguire's new team, the Titans, in. they had a crap year. There was just drama all over the shop, wasn't there? They really couldn't get a run on. The first half of the year, they were really, really solid and strong, but they just the wheels fell off, especially around Origin time, and then all the Hayne drama. That'd be enough to unsettle any club, wouldn't it?
I mean, it was regression, and not only did it basically not look like a team kind of it was good enough to make the finals. I mean, they even couldn't just organize themselves out of their own paper bag. A lot will depend, I guess, on who is coaching that side you know, next, because that's an answer that remains to be that remains to be seen. So it's hard to kind of predict where to next until that kind of the off field direction is figured out.
Well, it's interesting, Jeff, because there's a lot of belief out there that maybe Madge will go up to the Gold Coast. I mean, that reinvigorate his career and also the Titans. I mean, they've got a really great nucleus of players there. The Hayne distraction. I mean, how much did that play in to their demise? I mean, it's a bit of it's a big call to say your guy that you pay $1.2 million a year for is bringing the club down. You know, is that the case, or is it just a cultural thing? We've seen that a lot of Gold Coast sides have always struggled. Every side they've ever had up there, Seagulls, everyone struggled. So, is it just that little hotbed that just doesn't have it? Should they move up to Brisbane? I mean, you know, but hopefully they improve next year, because the Titans were playing some really tough football at the start of this year, and even though they were losing, they were putting in. So it was disappointing to see how they finished up.
Yeah. All righty. So West Tigers third last. They started with their own drummers too at the start of the year. They lost Jason Taylor after round three.
We remove everybody saw coming.
Yeah. And they had that contract drama with the three of the four big players. But once Ivan came on board, they sorted themselves out. They got Reynolds on his way. I reckon, you know, they'll be banging on the door of the eight next year. What do you reckon, Anthony?
I totally agree. And Benji's back. We don't know how much he's going to add, but... obviously, Benji coming back home is a really good feel-good story anyway. I think he'll add a lot from the bench. And just being around those younger players, we've seen that everyone at Brisbane are just absolutely raving about him. We'll talk about Benji a little bit later in that matchup against the Roosters. But I think he's going to be a really good acquisition for the side, just as a settler, just as someone that's captain New Zealand, won a grand final, played finals football. I think he's going to be a great acquisition. And I think this year the Tigers have just put a pencil through their own season. I think they just knew that it was done. You know, so hopefully next year with Ivan there and everyone settled, some great new players coming in, they'll improve. But it wasn't a great year for them. But in saying that, they put together some really good performances towards the back end of this year.
I only have a very quick note to add to West's, which is we predicted they'd come in 14th. They came in 14th, so thank you for your consistency.
Yes. Yeah, we nailed that one, didn't we? One out of 16 or two out of 16. Yeah.
Oh, come on, it was more than that.
Okay, I suppose the main question for the next team, so the Rabbitohs finished 12th. The main question is, are they going to finish higher on the ladder next year under a new coach?
You skipped New Zealand.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
The Warriors.
You forgot about the Warriors. Just okay. So, and basically doing what all of New Zealand is doing right now.
what an apt...
I wasn't going to let you skip this one, because this is my favourite one of the bunch.
That's fair.
That New Zealand Herald columnist basically called for the whole thing to be disbanded. That's the kind of reaction you really want, you know, for your league side. And, you know, Anthony, you brought up the point about, you know, kind of the Gold Coast's culture problem. Well... They really have to have a showdown, the two of these clubs, to see, you know, who've got the worst cultural issues. Because again, I mean, we were bullish, I think, on the Warriors starting this year, and you know, it's the same story, isn't it? That, you know, the talent looks fantastic, and it should kind of, you know, I was very high on Steve Kearney. I thought he was the right guy to be coach, and yet again. Same deal, you know.
We had them finishing ninth.
Yeah,
that was very optimistic, wasn't
yes.
it? So, yeah, no, they're never going to get it right. If they couldn't get it right this year, they never will, like dead set. What do you reckon, Anthony?
Yeah,
what else do they need? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the thing was bringing Kearney in, obviously the New Zealand, former New Zealand coach, they thought that he would understand the culture of the New Zealanders, and that's probably been one of the things that they've used it as an excuse, is that, you know, they get an Aussie coach over there or someone that doesn't understand the Kiwi culture and the guys sort of go astray. Well, Kearney's had his chance, and he was coming off a really successful stint, really, wasn't it, with the Kiwi side. So they've been really disappointing. I thought Kieran Foran would probably have fired a little bit more. you know, you just look at that side and you just wonder what's happening over there. But obviously there's something big happening, and I can't see them improving much. I mean, they might, it looks like they might have got Adam Blair, but they're going to lose Kieran Foran. So I can't see them improving too much, guys.
Yeah, once Sean Johnson gets injured, that's it. Show's over for them.
Yeah,
and it seems to happen every year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that question about the Rabbitohs, are they going to finish higher than what they did this year under a new coach? That'll pretty much determine as to whether this whole thing has been successful or not.
I'm of the school of thought, and paint me as a guy who is sympathetic to Maguire's situation. I don't think it was a coaching issue. I think it's a player issue.
Yeah.
I really do. And it's one of those classic situations where you can't sack all the players, so you got to sack the coach.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it astounds me kind of South's their trajectory from the post-premiership to now. How good they looked, how they looked to be almost, you know, a new dynasty. And James and I were discussing this the other day, and it might be applicable as we go forward in the final series. You know, winning the premiership is almost like a kiss of death. I don't think you improve after winning the premiership. I think you almost certainly take a step backwards, and they've definitely been one.
Yeah.
There you go. What's your take, mate?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think they really struggled. They just looked out of sorts, but I agree with Jeff. It was a player problem. Besides Burgess, I mean, Sam Burgess, you just can't ask anything more from that guy. But a lot of the other players seem to have a major dip in form, whether that's because they were training too hard or getting trained too hard by Maguire, I don't know, but there's something went a real miss in the last couple of years.
The player that didn't have a dip in form was a bloke who left, Luke Keary. His team's banging on the door of the premiership, so there you go.
There's a lot of money tied up in that club in players who I would argue are not in the top four or five players in their position. And that's a tough, you know, it's a tough thing to do in the NRL if you're paying major bucks to guys who are not giving you kind of the level of play, you know, with the way, you know, the cap is structured. And that's what I see kind of there. It's really tough. I don't know what you do. I mean, yeah, this is as much a Shane Richardson problem as it will be kind of an Anthony Seibold kind of problem.
No, for sure. All right, so on to the next team, onto the Dogs, and this is another conundrum, isn't it? In my view,
yeah.
their biggest problem was this year they played exactly like they did last year. Not much really changed at all.
Is this more of a water settling kind of thing, though? I mean, I actually probably was more optimistic about them than you two are. You actually had them kind of solidly out of the finals, and I didn't. I was trusting in kind of, yeah, the old structure there that, you know, it's a tough side that always kind of find their way to eighth or seventh or something like that. But I think it finally kind of, you know, it did finally kind of come for them this year that, you know, they can't keep on playing the same way and hope to kind of get results out of it. And, I mean, plainly they're in for a few kind of personnel changes next year. But their trajectory... It's funny. I wouldn't argue their trajectory is down. I'd just say it's sideways. They've just been kind of going the same kind of flat trajectory for years. It's just maybe the league that's changed around them. And, you know, plainly, you know, sometimes there's five better sides than they are, so they finished sixth. And this year there was ten better sides than there were, so they finished 11th. You know, they still seem like the same side. You know what I mean?
Definitely, definitely. And the thing with the Bulldogs is they've always done really well throughout their history. Is to really handle the back office adversity really well. They've been able to sort of put that to the side and play football. Are we finally seeing now all this stuff happening around Dez? Obviously, we saw Raylene Castle get moved on. And now they don't even have a CEO. The CEO isn't even starting till, I think it's November 1 or December 1. They don't even have a CEO. I mean, you know, think about all the sponsorship, all these decisions that have got to be made. Surrounding, they're over the cap. We know that much. They've moved on Wade Graham. They've got a lot of things they've got to sort out. They don't even have a CEO in there to make those decisions. So it's going to rest on other people to really navigate them through this tough period. Does that put them on the back foot for the start of next year? I think so.
Yeah, but probably the biggest take that I got out of the Bulldogs was they seem to swap players around positions far too much. Like Dez. Often panicked a little bit by the looks of it, without knowing too much about how a coach works. Mm. He'd swap players from fullback to 5/8 to centre, and cohesion and chemistry seem to be a big problem with the Dogs.
Yeah, I was watching that final game against St. George, and yeah, they kind of got to a level, and I told my St. George, my Dragon supporting wife, that said, "Oh, don't worry, you know, Canterbury can't score more than 20 points in a game." And then they put on that, you know, try for 26. So there you go. One question I put out to the table. Aaron Woods for James Graham. What are the thoughts and kind of the balance of that trade? I would personally take Graham, but you know.
Maybe he's one of those blokes who is in need of a freshen up.
Yeah.
I agree with you though. I know where you're going with that question, and yeah, you'd keep Graham, but Aaron Woods is he's due for a big year next year. Really has to put it out there, doesn't he?
He does, and he's on big money there too. He's coming. He'd be one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid front runner in the game now. You know, he's a big game player, terrific guy off the field as well. I've had a chat with him a couple of times. He's a great guy. I think he's probably in that mould, that Graham mould, because he's an old school footballer, and I think Aaron Woods has that type of feel about him. And he's about 5 or 6 years younger. So
that's scary. Good point.
You're getting that, but. And I think, you know, I think Graham's going to have a really, really great time at the Dragons. I think they're on the cusp of potentially something great, and he's definitely going to help them with that. But, disappointing season.
Do we jump ahead to St. George here for a second, considering we're on this Graham point?
All
right.
Okay, go.
My thoughts, you know, when it comes to them is that their season was very similar to the one they had a couple of years ago, where everyone wrote them off in preseason. They surprised everybody with a very strong start, and they kind of held on for dear life in the back half of the year. That was that year when that first year with Witt up there, and when they had Benji Marshall, when they were kind of surprised teams with the type of football they're playing. It's not a bad side. It's a solid side. Maybe a bit unlucky to miss out, but in another kind of scenario, you could very much see a finals side there. I mean, they're a lot better than I have historically given them credit for. I mean, they do have some kind of talent around the park.
Everyone seemed to be slaughtering them, including us. Where do we have them? We had them second last, finishing second last, and they finished a win outside the eight. Mm. But there seemed to be a lot of anger around, especially from Dragons fans. Overall, if you consider everything that happened across the whole season, they improved remarkably on last year. They actually started scoring points. Mm. And so you have to, just look at the year and think, well, it wasn't too bad compared to 2016. What's your take on the Dragons, Anthony?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I think the problem with them is, though, that... you know, having such a great... I mean, they were top of the table mid-season, weren't they, or thereabouts?
Yeah.
When you instill that much hope inside in your fans, they're bound to get disappointed because they saw the potential being reached. And throughout the back end of the year, they put some serious points on, like you said. I remember they beat Manly about 54-6 or something, only 5 or 6 weeks ago. So... they've got a lot of punch there, and I think they're going to grow a lot. They've got that young guy. What is it, Duffy? Dufty? The fullback. He looks like a star of the future for sure. I think that their season, all considered, went really well. Only another win, and they would have been there.
I read somewhere that they had the best for and against for a team not to make the finals in history. Yeah, that's. I'm a big believer in kind of that is a statistical marker. I think it kind of even that out over the long run, and that's generally a good predictor of overall team quality. I mean, it doesn't really translate to wins strictly, but usually you can tell kind of if a side kind of their baseline quality is reflected in that number, and so that speaks to kind of what's there at St. George.
Yeah,
Illawarra.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. And the last team are the Raiders. I want to go a little bit airy-fairy here and say that the Raiders' biggest problem this year was last year. That took so much emotion. That took so much energy last year. And you could tell that they were flat. They were flat from game one all throughout the whole year. They didn't get that many injuries. They're basically the same team. But geez, the backing up from last year's roller coaster ride, and there was so much hype and the excitement and everything from their fans, that's tough to back up for.
Was it a style of football thing? Was it a thing where last year, you know, they were playing that kind of what's in front of you, unpredictable style, and you had, you know, Leilua and Rapana just killing teams on the right, and give teams an off season to look at it. And I think Penrith, who was kind of the other kind of exemplar of that style, might have encountered a bit of the same thing. Teams got a better look at it after a while, and you know, it wasn't so hard to kind of to play against.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
It would have been a long off season for them, wouldn't it? With so much hope. You know, they would have got a lot of confidence out of that back end. What, they made the preliminary final last year, didn't they?
They lost to Melbourne in that game down in Melbourne. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they had a wonderful season. I expected a lot more. I think we all did, but I don't know what it was. Maybe that expectation weighed them down. You know, I guess it's a different beast when you're winning and no one expects you to, but when you're expected to do well, and a lot of people are tipping it from the top, maybe the hype got to them a bit, because their discipline in particular throughout the season was shocking.
That was a big thing. Yeah,
matches was just, their heads just weren't in it. Leilua in particular, even Hodgson there at hooker, some of the things, whether it be unsportsmanlike contact, rubbing people's faces in the dirt, or you know, holding down too much, just giving away so many penalties for a lack of discipline. So that's an attitude thing, isn't it? So, and with a Ricky Stewart coach side, I found that interesting. So once they get their attitude right, I think they'll be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, for sure. You got anything more to add on Canberra, mate? Or?
My mate, one of my uni mates, who had this very kind of detailed formula for how every Canberra Raider season would finish, and that formula blew up last year as they did really, really well. Funnily enough, the formula's back in effect, because this is basically the way the formula works, which is just, it basically adds up to about 10 or 11 wins. How many did they finish on this?
They got 11.
They got 11, so there you go. Perfect. And his idea was that if 11 wins gets you to the finals, which it does in rare cases in certain years, well, they'll make the finals, and if they don't, they don't. So, you know, there you go. Raiders, 11 wins again.
Yeah. Very good, very good. So there you go. It's sounds as if we've given every side a massive rep for next year, and so the top eight and the bottom eight will basically switch, won't it?
Well, before we leave this portion of the question, which of, we always know that one bottom eight side makes the finals, you know, the next season. Who is it going to be? Let's commit ourselves to picking one for next year.
I'll go the Tigers. I think there's something exciting happening there with their young players, blokes like Elijah Taylor. He had a really good year, and there's a lot of undiscovered talent in the Tigers, so they're my nomination. What about you, Anthony?
I know it's the obvious one, but I think the Dragons. I think the Dragons will be there. I don't know about top four, but I think around sixth or seventh, they'll build on this year. And with Ben Hunt there, he's been in supreme form to steer them around a bit better. I think they're going to go a lot better next.
Now, you took mine. That's that'd be mine, and that's boring. I mean, to pick the ninth side that missed barely, but they would seem to be the most plausible. I would be interested to see if someone out of the next seven could kind of really surprise. But I don't see a lot of upward trajectory from, or at least pronounced upward trajectory from the rest of the bottom eight.
Fair enough. We've had a go, so we'll see how it pans out. So our hero and zero of the week, I've gone ahead and nominated Semi Radradra. I reckon for him, I haven't always been his biggest fan, but I reckon if as far as wingers controlling a side's fortunes, I know that they're only accessories to the main part of the team, in a lot of people's opinion, but he seems to contain the energy of Parramatta. If he's on fire, then if he doesn't cause it, then he certainly feels it through the rest of the backs, and he was just, he scored 7 tries in the last 2 weeks, so I reckon he's been sensational.
He's been really good. I mean, you'd be kicking yourself, though, if you were the Parramatta administration. I mean, he's going away for a year to play French rugby. He's going to miss next season. If he hadn't gone through all that that alleged domestic violence stuff, I mean, he'd be sticking around next year and really be a part of their surge, because I think, obviously, Mitchell Moses is on the side there. They're really building. So Yeah, he's unbelievable. And for a winger to have that much bearing on the outcome of the match is so rare. I mean, they're great finish. We've got some great finishes in the game, but just his whole repertoire is absolutely fantastic.
Can I nominate a hero?
Yeah,
it's very rare I have a hero, so you know this is going to be one of my heroes of the year. If I believe which Morris was it? Was it Josh Morris? Josh Morris for doing that press conference dressed up as Thor before he went away to Canterbury's Mad Monday celebrations. Now that is the kind of media access and professionalism we need from NRL players. What was beautiful about it was he actually did a serious press conference dressed up as that. He answered serious questions. So, you know, I applaud the undying professionalism of it is Josh. I keep on blinking whether you sure it's not Brett. Like, you know, they could just fool, you know, that would be a Mad Monday trick, you know, like, you know, it's actually Brett. No, so, yeah, you got to applaud that. You got to applaud that level of professionalism.
And I might as well have a hero of the week. Funnily enough, I put a story up last week, a negative story about Cameron Smith. Got some quotes from Bill Harrigan saying that if he was repping Cameron Smith, that Smith would be on the bench getting splinters because of how much bearing he's got on a game. Which absolutely ran off. I think we got about 7,000 or 8,000 views. It was a really great story. A lot of people loved it. But after doing that little negative nudge wink about Smithy, sorry Smithy, I'll give him my hero of the week. He'll surpass Darren Lockyer this week, 356 games as the most capped player, and Frank Panisi, the Melbourne Football Manager, has come out and said they want to keep him for 2019. That'd seem well and truly smash 400 games. I mean, what a champion of the game and a great guy as well.
Oh, well said. Yeah, well said. All right, so and a zero. I'm going to go ahead and nominate the Roosters crowd for their performance last week. It was disgraceful. Yeah. I went and watched them play the Titans, and yes, I paid for my own ticket. Sat there in this grandstand, and I don't know which players were involved. I can't remember, but there was a really solid head high. It was a hit, which unfortunately ended in a concussion case. Sorry, it wasn't head high. I'll take that back. But as the player lay down on the ground, you know, there was a bit of a pause. And being a concussion hit, naturally the referee put the player on report. And there was this almighty boo from the Roosters crowd. And I thought, what is this? Is this in Roman times with a Colosseum and a big friggin' lion coming out and chasing someone? It was really barbaric and... And I thought, footy fans are biased at the best of times, but it riled me up. Maybe I should harden up.
No, I would think you bring out kind of an interesting point here. I think fans are more sensitive these days to those types of hits.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Like, you know, I would think that, you know, kind of awareness around kind of the impact of head trauma is growing and. Yeah, like whereas it used to be the cause to like let out a huge cheer to see someone lay on a massive hit, I think people now are more kind of more sensitive to the idea that I can see where that leads. So I don't know. That surprise. Yeah, it's kind of. I'm sure you know there's still kind of a bit of bloodlust out there. But,
Anyway, so it wasn't a shocking tackle. It was just really hard. But what's a referee supposed to do? Like, yeah, you've been carried off on a Medicab. So there you go. Anyone else got a zero, or should I move on?
We'll move on.
No, I don't have a zero this week. I've been pretty happy with everything I've seen.
No worries. Sorry, mate?
That's really rare for me.
No complaints.
we'll just rush through this second half of the podcast, just for technical reasons, you'll discover at the end of the podcast as to what those technical reasons are. So, yeah. So we'll start off with the Roosters and the Broncos Friday night to kick off the opening round of the semis. Roosters have got Napa and Aiden Guerra coming back. And for the Broncos, Darius Boyd's out, and Nick Arima is going to be playing at fullback. and Benji Marshall returns to the side. So what's your tip in this one, Jeff?
This is the one I've found the hardest to pick. I really don't. Yeah, like, we were kind of extrapolating the bracket, and we were kind of looking at this and saying to ourselves that, yeah, whoever wins this, you know, I think whoever wins this basically avoids Melbourne, right? Is that that's kind of the implication. So I reckon whoever wins this might end up have kind of like the glide, if not the glide path, but the inside track is probably the term I'm looking for, to the grand.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I'm going Brisbane. Yeah. In this one.
Good for you.
Who's your tip?
I'm not committing. This man was the tipping champ this year, Anthony. So, you know, he grabbed the lead in, like, what was it, round three, and didn't give it up. So, you know, I'm not – why put my tips out there? I finished 13th in the comp. So, like, you know, who wants to listen to me?
Well, Anthony's going with his favourite side, the Broncos, aren't you?
Mate, I've got to say, I think the Roosters are going to win this.
There we go.
I think Brisbane – I haven't liked what I've seen from them over the last couple of weeks. They were pretty ordinary against the depleted Cowboys outfit last weekend, 20-10. There's just something about them. Boyd is a huge loss. Cody Nikorima at fullback. You wouldn't be going to the wings. You'd be dropping bombs for him, wouldn't you? I mean, he's 5 foot nothing. When he runs up the field, it's just like a football with legs. You can't even see his head. He's that little. But he has been playing well in the halves. I'll give him that much. Fullback's a totally different story, but you know, Wayne Bennett's the genius. But I just think, yeah, Boyd out, Sims out, McCulloch. I think, they've been without McCulloch for a while, but I just think it's going to catch up with them. I can see them losing.
All righty, there you go.
Oh, shit, boy.
Alrighty, so next up is the Storm and the Eels down at Amy Park on Saturday afternoon, 4:10 p.m. Dale Finucane's back for the Storm and Kenny Bromwich moves to the bench and the Eels are unchanged. That's probably the biggest aspect for the Eels, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah. Is it going to help them? I'm of the opinion that, you know, if Melbourne loses, it's going to be an accident. So, you know.
Yeah.
That said, though, you know, more than anything else, I'm motivated by the fact that it's going to disappoint all the Eels fans, all the Para fans among our colleagues. So that's the only interest I really have kind of in the results, in the outcome of this game. But that said, though, I mean, yeah, Para is the kind of side that could just do this, couldn't they? You know, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, just unpredictable enough that, yeah, that, you know, they could catch the Storm out.
I reckon of all the I agree, and I don't know, I wouldn't bet on it, but if there's an absolute boil over this weekend, then it's the Eels. I reckon they're on such momentum, and I just wouldn't be surprised. That's all. But I'm going to Storm. What's your take, Anthony, on this?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this match for a couple of reasons. First one is that we'll get to see how good the Eels are and how good the Storm really are. I mean, the advantages of winning this match and earning a week off and having only to play one more game before making the grand final is huge. So I think we're going to see a really determined Storm outfit and the Eels. There's been a bit of niggle there from the coach, Brad Arthur, you know, sort of alluding to the fact that you know, the Storm are the great weapon. It'll lie around a lot, trying to get the ref to, you know, understand they want to play some footy, and that'll suit them. They're going to have to play footy. They're going to have to play out of the box a little bit, because if you play Melbourne's game, well, it's only going to be one winner. They don't win if they win by 2 points. It doesn't matter. They'll strangle you. So I'm really looking forward to this match. I think the Eels can do it, but in saying that, I can't remember a competition where we've had a leader so far ahead of the pack. I mean, Storm, I don't know who's going to get near them. Maybe that'll change now. The finals are here. Hopefully the Eels can do it. I'd love to see the Eels.
It's Paris' second road game in 2 months. Hope they're used to, like, you know, foreign hotel beds or something like that.
That's unbelievable. Is that right?
Yeah. Like, one in their last 7 matches was on the road. Wow. So, you know, the other 7 were at ANZ. So, yeah.
God.
They've had to get used to the hotel for one weekend. That was the trip up to Suncorp, where they won big. It must be noted. But that's their only other road trip in the last couple of months.
Must be the after match sauna at the hotel with all the boys getting.
maybe. Moving on to this grudge match between the Eagles and the Panthers, Saturday 7:40 p.m. at Allianz. Both sides unchanged, so it's basically both sides just lining back up again and going at it. I've been saying to Jeff through the week, Anthony, that I felt that Penrith were that bad, they must have been holding something back. Like, it was just an absolutely dreadful performance by Penrith. I don't know whether it was a Brookvale thing or whether Manly were just so suffocating of them, but if you put 26 points on a fellow finals team, you've got to have something going for you, and that's what Manly has at the moment, I think. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a lot closer. I was really surprised by how Penrith played at Brookvale Oval. They were totally out of sorts. Their discipline was really, really tested as well. I think Manly... I'm hoping Manly can win. But I think it's going to be a lot closer. I think there'll only be sort of six points in it. Not being at Brookvale is a huge thing. I think that the fact that they sent off Brett Stewart, Matt Fallon, all the old boys were there at the game with a lap of honour. I think that really stirred the boys up. Obviously, playing for a semi-finals position to solidify one as well. I think this is going to be a lot different. It's probably a bit of a shame they're just lining up against each other again, but Penrith will have Manly worked out now, and this one's going to have a bit of bite. Sudden death footy, love it.
Yeah, do you reckon Manly's fans will travel? Do you reckon enough of them will travel over the bridge and into that other country called Sydney? And
they're very habitual, aren't they? They stay up there on the northern beaches. I mean, from spending 12 months living on the northern beaches, they are a nice place. And thank goodness for Fox Football and Channel 9. I mean, sitting at home watching it is a wonderful thing. But they bloody should. I would. If I was there, I'd be at the game. But I don't think there's going to be many of them there, mate. I think Penrith will have more supporters there, to be honest.
Yeah, I will hope so. What's your unbiased take on this game?
Yeah, I hope you two can remain friends after this. That's first. I want to be privy to the banter on the Vanessa. It's Saturday night. That'll be great. I'm always fascinated by these week after things where you've kind of got teams that have played kind of very, very soon, maybe in last round, penultimate round, meeting again in the finals. Because I buy into the theory that, you know, the finals is its own reality. I seem to think that, yeah, players kind of, you know, there are certain underlying things from the season that you certainly bring into the finals, like that you can't defy, like good teams are generally good teams, so forth. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if kind of like the initial minutes of this match just kind of totally rewrite kind of the feeling we got from last weekend's game. And it'll be interesting to see kind of if indeed, as James suggests, one team was kind of holding back with maybe the knowledge that that they would be seeing kind of this opponent again, very soon in the finals.
It's just going to be a terrific game.
Before we go anywhere, any thoughts on Moylan, James?
Oh,
no. See, he doesn't want to sell. He don't want to talk about it anymore.
Moylan.
Moylan. Any thoughts on Moylan, Anthony?
Well, I think he's a terrific player. There's definitely something going on there. You've got to full points to Phil Gould for jumping on the front foot, doing his press conference, and so many of the stories were written that way. He's got these personal issues, that kind of thing. But the Mail is. That it's a football issue. That's what people are saying. That it's a football issue. In saying that, mental illness is a huge problem in society. So if he is suffering from any type of mental illness, I wish him a quick recovery. But I'm not sure that is the case. I think he's frustrated by his football and the circumstances surrounding the club, rather than it being an issue off the field.
It's the worst possible thing for him, isn't it? You got in one of his positions, you've got arguably the most talented junior in the game in Nathan Cleary, and in his other position, Dylan Edwards, who had an absolute blinder. It may just prove to be the worst possible time to have a string of injuries, like 2017 for Matt Moylan. Like any other season, he would have been out the front, you know, no worries at all. Where do you want to play, Matt? But this season, as unpredictable as Penrith have been, the two sure things, the two most consistent players have been Nathan Cleary and that Dylan Edwards, and it's just rotten timing for Moylan as far as locking anything down is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tough one, and, you know, Ivan Cleary's, you know, come out and said that he wants him if he wants to come to the Tigers, so, you know, it's all up in the air, but being a Penrith junior, it'd be great to see him stay and help you guys to a premiership.
Yeah, hands off Tigers. Just stay away from him. So. okay, so last game of the weekend will be Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, 4:10 at Allianz. Sharks and the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys have done really well to get to this point in the season.
Yeah.
They've just slogged through week in, week out. So many injuries. Blokes had come back. You can tell they're not right. But, you know, if you like that, Queensland spirit has been really behind a lot of their performances. And I just think the Sharks will get the job done here on Sunday afternoon. What do you guys reckon, Jeff?
I'm with you on that one. They seem like the tough out for me. The team that you don't really want to play, Cronulla, which is kind of far sight change from their historic reputation. But if not just, you know, because, you know, the defending premier always has a bit of that aura to them. Just their style of play is gonna, it means you're in for a kind of a tough afternoon. So yeah. That said, I don't think. I don't think Path will scare them, particularly after last year. Like how kind of going on the road to Canberra and then winning that game that was so difficult, and then kind of overcoming the force of history. So yeah, I mean, and I'd have to echo what you said, James. You got to give. I think it's almost a case where not trying to write kind of, you know, North Queensland out of the 2017 competition already, but you know it is a hell of an achievement to have gotten to where they've gotten to without JT.
Yeah, I totally agree. Jeff, you're absolutely right. They've done so well. Michael, what's his name? 5'8".
Oh, Morgan, yeah.
Morgan.
Sorry, guys. I'm just thinking Michael will go up for a second. Morgan has stepped up sensationally. He's been fantastic the last couple of months. And with Cronulla, I just get the feeling that they've been waiting for this. They've been coasting along. They've been playing in third.
Yeah, very true.
And they're waiting for the finals. This is when their season starts. They'll be very disappointed they didn't secure a top four finish and have that second bite of the cherry. But I just get the feeling that the Cronulla are going to come and blow away a couple of teams on their way to possibly another grand final. And I think they're very capable of doing that. Paul Gallen's been in outstanding form at 36 years of age. He's signed on for another year. What a freak. And they've been there and they've done it. They've all got experience. It's a very similar team to what they had last year, and like I said, they're a tough side. They're going to blow the Cowboys off the park.
All right, fair enough. That's a good assessment. It's probably going to happen. Very good. All righty, so that's the first week of the semis all done and dusted. We're going to go to our listener questions, not viewer questions. As I said last week, that was
League World Cup, mate. First,
we'll talk about League World Cup first.
League World Cup first.
Alrighty. So one of the absolute passionate sides that's going to be running around in the World Cup, and probably, arguably, everybody's second team is going to be PNG. And
my first team. I'm taking on first team.
Jeff's first team. Yeah.
Forget you, Australia.
And we've had a little bit to do with them. We've been pumping out some literature for their local fans in the lead up to the tournament, and Jeff, what's your overall flavour or overall sense of the temperature of PNG Rugby League heading into the World Cup?
You kind of hit it on the head with the first thing there. This, we like to think probably of ourselves here in Australia as kind of the most kind of rugby league mad nation. I think we don't. Sorry, what's kind of the expression I'm using here?
I don't think we hold a candle, really, to, you know, to Papua New Guinea. I mean, the fervor for the game there is really quite incredible. You know, I mean, we have other sports in this country. I don't think they've got another one there. You know, they're kind of, you know, ecstatic about the fact that they're getting kind of World Cup games to come to there. And you just hope that, you know, kind of the Kumuls can kind of live up to that level of excitement. And you hope it kind of continues, kind of a very positive trend for the game there. And I wanted to kind of bring Anthony you in on this. You know, the PNG Hunters, you know, kind of running so well. We are all kind of in agreement that, you know, you'd love to see kind of these other areas of the rugby league world kind of really develop and really come on. And I think, you know, PNG really has got a tremendous amount of potential.
They really do. When I used to write for a newspaper here in Queensland, I did a lot of reporting on the Intra Super Cup and was lucky enough to report on the PNG Hunters a little bit, interview some of their players and their coaching staff, and get a feel for what it was like for my team, the Sunshine Coast Falcons, to go over there and to actually play over there. I mean, these guys are semi-professional rugby league players, and they're just lauded over there. It's like you're an Australian rugby league player. These guys are treated with such respect, and it's such a great experience for young Australian boys to go over there and experience their culture, because it's something to be seen. Their football they play is tough and uncompromising. I really enjoy how they play it. They're all built so strongly. From fullback to front row, there's not a lot of change in how these guys are framed. You know, they're all fast, they're quick, and they hit really hard. I think it'd be wonderful for the Kumuls to play strongly, and great for them over there. I mean, they see rugby league as an opportunity to better themselves. Maybe one day they'll have a professional team. I don't know, but I mean, we all know what the tensions that are faced by society over there, and rugby league's really used as as an escape from all that, and that's why they're so passionate about it. And I hope they play really well, because they're tough, they're really good guys, they're making inroads to potentially have an NRL team one day, which I think is fantastic. I'd love to see them go well.
They're also in the early running for my best names of the Rugby League World Cup. It's a team full of fantastic names, you know. Awesome, love it.
Stargroth.
Shout out to Stargroth Amin. Yeah, not gonna get much better than that.
Wellington Albert. He's
Wellington
the other one.
Albert. Yeah. Is it Adex Wera? That's a good name too. Oh, you know, I mean, just one after the other. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's gold. well said about PNG, Anthony. Yeah, it's not. Among everybody's favourite team, but not everybody knows a great deal about them. And that insight was really interesting, mate.
Yeah, cool. No, I'd love to see them do well. They're a really important cog in the rugby league world. It just means so much to them over there. And if every nook and cranny of Australia had a fingertips of love for the game as they do, the game would be in a very good place in this country.
Oh, well done. Alrighty, so getting towards the end of this podcast, on Twitter through the week we posed the question, who is the hardest rugby league player you've ever seen? We've got some really good responses. Any first up responses from you guys? Jeff?
Oh, I don't know if he's the hardest, but I think, you know, kind of in attitude, if not in actual kind of in truth or physicality, but how could you go past Tommy?
Tommy
is the toughest person in the history of humanity, isn't he?
He is.
Nothing tougher than that. Although I must admit, seeing some of these responses were great.
Yeah.
I think this really activates kind of the imagination of the rugby league fans. So I was really interested to see some of the responses we got. So Anthony, you?
Well, this is...
And it doesn't have to be a Queenslander.
No. This is a tough one. I've been following this game since I was five, so about 30 years I've been watching this game. Someone that really sticks out to me that you guys might be surprised about, but I just remember watching him as a young boy and just especially all the conjecture around him, was Ian Roberts. He was so tough, and obviously he's done a lot for the game off the field as well. But just him on the field, he just went out there and bashed guys, and was probably the quintessential modern day front rower. You know, 6'3", quick, agile, but geez, he could put a hit on. Ian Roberts, to me, he was always great to watch.
Terrific. And my nomination would be Ray Price, a Parramatta legend. I used to watch him as a kid and just think, he's not human, that bloke. Like, he seemed to get tougher and tougher as the game went on. The more greasy he got, the more dirty he got. He just, knuckled down, and would have been awful to play against.
I think somebody told me once, maybe even you or another of our colleagues, that when you actually asked the tough guys of football who the toughest was, that was the answer you got. So for what it's worth, they'd all kind of like, their consensus was Ray Price.
And I think what separates Ray was that he had such a long career, didn't he? He was at the top of his game for a long time. So, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, terrific. All righty, so what do you reckon about these? Karate Warrior 2 reckons Mark Stimson. Listen to this. You give me another player who played on after having toes amputated due to a workplace accident.
Yeah, it's hard to beat. It's hard to beat that one.
There you go. There you go. So Ray Price is a bit fairy-like compared to that, isn't he? So West Sydney Sport says, the closest I could think of was David Gillespie losing some fingers on a Garbo run.
Wow. Another Manly great.
NRL Stats nominates Jeff Tuvey. There you go. This is a bloody mafia.
Not an uncommon response, this one, though.
No, that's
tough. And was a tough player.
Someone called Prof M. Davis, who none of us know, has nominated Ryan Purdler. It's an in-joke. It's Ryan Purdler. Ryan Girdler was very tough. I remember watching Girdler and Justin Hodges go at it. Mm. Justin Hodges was giving Girdler, he was being an absolute pain, and Girdler snapped back at him, and it was the most surprising thing anyone had ever seen, because Girdler had that reputation as being pretty, but he was quite tough, like when anyone had a go at him, and it was a really thorny confrontation, and they didn't have a fight, but they were just on that sort of 99% sort of, one more little twitch and it would have been on. It was a terrific memory that I have of both players, yeah.
Can we take it the other way for a second, like the softest rugby league player of all time, or the softest thing you've ever seen on the field? I've just got to get this out of there because it just sticks in my memory. When Braithen Astor was like clipped on the head that time, immediately covered his eyes and ran back just looking at the referee. That was really soft, Braith.
We're doing that next week. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's the there's your follow-up question. Yeah.
That's great. Steel Sports, they're a big supporter of us. They're a radio station around the Newtown area. They nominate Reddy, Price, Bowden, Tuvey again, Pierce and Thorne.
So like a combination of all those guys?
So. Yeah, a super robot.
That combination, Frankenstein monster of those guys would be extremely tough.
God, Wayne Pierce.
As opposed to just being a Frankenstein, when you factor in they're a Frankenstein monster as well.
Oh, gosh. Ben Pobgy, Gary Jack. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Friend of the mag?
Yeah, another one, yeah. Andrew Mado. Igor Randall. Also, a mate of mine who played a bit said no one played through injury as well as Steve Rogers. He was a little bit before our time, wasn't he? Like, but yeah, he gets a lot said about him. Turtle Wilson nominates Wally Fullerton Smith. Still a legend up your way, Anthony, up there?
Oh, yeah. Big Wall. Legend.
the Sportress nominates Dean Lance.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a footy card name, isn't it, Dean Lance? Arv nominates Tuvey. Nordberg agrees with you, Anthony, Ian Roberts. And TJ the punter, Ray Price was tough. And Ted Baxter finally nominates Jeff Robinson. He was another one. You see lots of grainy footage of him, and And he, a lot of people talk about how tough he was and how he never gave up. Apparently, he was one of the players that the modern tough fighting spirit of the Bulldogs was based around. So, yeah.
Well, that's a great response. That's awesome. A lot of people are responding to the tweet, guys. That was really cool. And it was good to see someone else like Dean Roberts as well. Because after I said, I was like, am I right? But I think I thought maybe my manly passion was coming out.
You didn't see Ian Roberts in too many fights, did you?
Nobody wanted to take him on.
No.
That's the thing about, you know, kind of true toughness. Like, if you really are that, you really are the kind of that fearsome, no one will take you on.
No. Alrighty. All right, so that'll just about do us. We have been highlighting what's in our magazine, but we've got a new edition on sale next week, so we're going to be a little bit like a semi-final team and keep our powder dry for another week. Well, what's been going on the website, Anthony? Like, what's been getting the most hits, and what are people really interested in reading about on our website?
Yeah, people have been really following, obviously, the sacking of Maguire. That's getting a lot of hits. The quirky stories seem to be going well, and I advise everyone to visit the website. It's those quirky ones rather than the breaking news. The really interesting stuff, like the quotes from Bill Harrigan there about Cameron Smith. Another really great story on Daily Cherry Evans actually explained why he did his backflip and how he's dealt with the aftermath of that. It's the first time he's really spoken about that. That's on the website as well. There are a couple of stories I'd be looking at, plus our previews for the NRL and AFL finals this week. There's a lot of good stuff on there, guys, so get to insidesport.com.au.
Yes, indeed.
Well done. You're doing a good job up there. Alrighty. Well, that's pretty much it. We'll let you digest the finals action over the weekend, and we'll be back again next week to do it all again. Thanks very much, fellas.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.